And I saw a dolphin yesterday.
Oh, lovely.
Yes.
Lovely.
You didn't seem quite impressed by that, Hayley. I'll be honest with you. You seemed a little bit like you didn't care.
No, I did. I heard dolphin, but I didn't register what a dolphin was until afterwards. And I was like,
I'm in Bradford and Avon all the time.
Yeah, we see those all the time in the River Avon.
Charlie, I think she did that on purpose.
Welcome to the Spooktator podcast. I'm your host, Hayley Stevens, and joining me for this episode are Paul Gannon and Charlie Revel-Smith.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
We're here to examine the stranger elements of life, society, international culture, and the media. You can find details of everything we discuss in this episode at spooktator.co.uk, where you can also get in touch with us too. So, guys, have you been up to anything interesting since we last spoke?
Well, I have. I am currently down in Cornwall and I'm recording from, of all places, an abandoned house, which probably sounds a little bit more dramatic than it actually is.
I was going to say, what is the context?
It's in a little village called Coverack, and last summer there was a huge flash flooding. I was actually down here when it happened and it was pretty much a nightmarish day of just astonishing. Thankfully nobody was seriously injured in it, but it was a pretty hair-raising day, including actually me having to go be a bit heroic and break into a house to rescue an old lady who was trapped upstairs.
Yes, I remember you telling us about that.
So I am down staying in this cottage, and I say it's abandoned. All it is, it's just there's not people living here, there's not carpets and things like that, and because it's in the process of getting sort of fixed up and floods damage being repaired, so I'm stepping in and helping out where I can. But so that's what I've been doing.
Okay, because when you said that you were in an abandoned house, I was like, is there a chance you're going to be arrested halfway through?
Yeah, I'm actually squatting as well.
Yeah, you're like
you're
swampy.
Holding a protest.
Yes, yeah, I've set up a tree house in the back. No, I'm here legitimately, and I am just helping out with what I can. And I'm actually having a very nice time. The weather has been surprisingly nice for February.
Well, I haven't been up to very much. I recently started a new job. But apart from that, I was in an earthquake, guys. And I can't believe you guys didn't experience the earthquake, did you?
I missed it because there was very little movement at all down in Cornwall. And I was out on a walk, so I probably wouldn't have felt it anywhere. I was really disappointed because I would love to experience it.
Well, it was a magnitude 4.2 on the scale, which is quite severe for the UK. I think we've had earthquakes in like the last 5 years or so that have kind of registered at 2 point something, and that's been about it. And the epicenter was about 4 kilometers from Swansea, over in Wales, and it was about 2:30. I was sat at my desk where I am now actually, and I've just sat here typing away. I was working on an assignment, and suddenly everything just started to shake, and it was the most surreal thing because I've never experienced an earthquake before. And my desk was wobbling and my computer monitor started moving towards me across the desk, and I had no idea what was going on. I thought that next door were doing some like serious DIY. I was like, what the hell's going on? And I stood up, and when I stood up, I realized that I was also shaking, and I've got like a string of felt hearts hanging in my window, and they were just swishing backwards and forwards. Wow. And I was like, holy shit, this is an earthquake. And then really strangely though, I was like, oh no, it can't be an earthquake. Maybe it's paranormal. And then I was like, what are you saying, Hayley? That's ridiculous. You are a ghost investigator. Of course it's not paranormal. But I was really reluctant to go online and go, was that an earthquake? Because it's like the most unlikely thing to happen in Bradford-on-Avon, but yeah,
we just don't think of it happening in this country. No. I think that this one which happened the other day was still like among the top 10 of the strongest ever recorded in the UK.
I was looking at the last 10 years of earthquakes in the UK, and it's certainly one of the strongest. If I think it's like the second or the most strongest that we've had in the last 10 years. But I've never experienced one But most of the southwest area of the UK did experience it. Obviously, Wales experienced it more.
Yeah, there were even in Bristol, there was a bit of structural damage. Yeah. It was like chimney pots and things. It wasn't anything too major, but yeah, it did have an effect, and it does make you think when stuff like that happens.
Yes, yeah, it's just so unexpected, and obviously it was just a couple of days after the huge earthquakes in Mexico, and I know friends of mine in America have experienced earthquakes too in the last couple of days, and it's just very unusual, and it was very scary actually, because I didn't know really what was going on. Everything was moving and it was the sound. It was just this like the sound from within the earth, like everything was just making a noise. Obviously the stuff in the house was shaking around and rattling, but it was just like this sound in the earth. It was the most surreal thing. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. What about you, Paul?
Well, I'm working on a few more new podcast and YouTube projects, which for some reason I find I can fit into my schedule, even though I can't and they barely pay. So that's my life. But also I've been watching, and I have to apologise for this, because when we first started doing the Spooktator, I started realising that my whole thing was paranormal reality TV. And to some extent, I think it still is. And there's a line, isn't there, in The Godfather, you think you get out and they pull you back in. Well, most haunted back. And like most rubbernecking car crash kind of situations, I can't not look. And it's funny as well, because this was inspired by two stories. It's interesting, actually. I looked online about Most Haunted to see if it's still worth banging the drum. Because as we all know, it's like there were paranormal TV shows before Most Haunted, and they were more like the Arthur C. Clarke kind of things, and the Leonard Nimoy show, which I forget the name of right now. But they're all kind of documentary-esque story time kind of ghost hunting. But it was really up until Most Haunted when it became like an in situ ghost hunt, you know, an as it happens report of a ghost hunt in action. And it kind of revolutionized what we now think of, you know, supernatural TV, for better or for worse. And then we're not going to go over the history of Most Haunted here again, but it tailed off, it died a natural death, and then there were other shows that became bigger. And so when Most Haunted came back on, was it UK Living that initially took it back?
It was,
Yeah.
Oh, no, they had it originally, and then it came back on...
Oh, was it Really?
Something else. Really? Yeah, that's really it.
Yeah, it's on Really now, and they own it now, and all the kind of episodes for the last few seasons and things. Because Really have kind of dove into this whole paranormal reality TV genre. And so their Watch Again webpage is stacked full of so many of these kind of shows. I feel like Augustus Gloop from Willy Wonka with the amount. It's like, if you could just swap out the River of Chocolate for paranormal reality TV shows, I've fallen in and I'm trapped in a pipe. So I've been watching a lot of these shows, like Haunted Australia and the RIP Files, and a Canadian ghost hunting show, which is so polite, you feel sorry for them. Where most shows are really combative, this show, and I forget the name of it off the top of my head right now, but that show is so lovely and polite, and it's kind of feckless and a little bit weak sauce, but you kind of watch it going, I hope you get a demon, because right now it seems to be mostly cats and old ladies you're being haunted by. Or ghosts that like to draw on dusty cars. You know, you need to step it up a bit, Canada. Anyway, Most Haunted comes back, and I was thinking, you know, has it missed the boat? Because I kind of feel it came back because it saw the money shows like Ghost Hunters was making and Ghost Adventures, and they kind of wanted to jump back on that bandwagon. And I just don't think it's the same thing. It's the equivalent of like Wimpy's versus McDonald's. You know, everyone knows McDonald's, but Wimpy's kind of came first. But Wimpy's still straggling along, doing its little thing, being Wimpy, and McDonald's is
McDonald's. To put it in context of cultural points, I would get when you have someone who did really well at Eurovision a few years ago and they come back and try and do it again, it's always a disaster and everyone hates it.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think any American listeners will know what the Wimpy is.
Or Eurovision.
It's basically... Well, no.
Yeah, true. That's true.
I mean, Wimpy's is basically McDonald's, but you get a dinner tray.
And you get like a curly sausage rather.
A curly sausage. That's right.
A little bit B grade when you're in there.
Yes.
It's like a school canteen. That,
it's like know, it's a that, cheap it's, Burger yeah. King.
Yes. Which, as we found out, was bought. They bought out Wimpy's in the 90s, I believe.
Did they really?
Oh, yeah, okay. Burger King bought out all the Wimpy's. And I believe that was even 89, because I remember going to a, I want to say a Wimpy's, but I can't remember if it was Burger King or not. But there was a Ghostbusters 2 promotion, and they had little Ghostbusters 2 Happy Meals kind of things for Burger King. So that's why I know that random fact. But I looked online to look at like press releases for the new Most Haunted, and this is what's happened. Since it's come back to... really, the viewing figures apparently are 30% higher than 10 years ago.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Which is fascinating. And the new series that started in January will mark its 238th episode, which now makes it basically like the Simpsons of these kind of shows.
It does, yeah. Wow.
And to be fair, though, there are probably more episodes of like Ghost Hunters, because they would do 20 episodes and it was 10 seasons or something like that. So there's probably... a lot of stones turned over.
That is
but
staggering, though, especially for British TV shows where we don't make as many episodes per series. That
no.
is... Yeah. That is... I would never have guessed that. I would have thought that they would still... They hadn't even made it to their first 100 yet.
I would... But, it also, it kind of... It, that's quite impressive in that they don't really revisit locations all that much. So that's, what, 230-something... new yeah. locations they've had to source that are supposedly haunted.
Hmm. So, I mean, funnily enough, I just watched an episode now where they went to Dudley Castle, and I'm pretty sure they'd been to Dudley Castle before.
They have.
And the only reason I found that interesting is because that's where I did Psychic and Science for our finale of the tour, hey. Where we did an outside, yeah, with Derek Acora. I've told this story, I'm sure I have, but Derek Acora was the psychic on that show. We had 3,000 people in the audience. It was an outside event. Certain people got to go on ghost hunts inside Dudley Castle itself. And that was when Derek Acora spoke to my girlfriend. At the time, I'd just started dating, who was a massive Derek Acora fan, and she wanted to meet him. So while I was doing my bit on stage, he was talking to her off stage, and I saw her face go from delighted to terrified. And when I went to speak to her afterwards, I went, "What did Derek say to you?" And she goes, "Well, Derek told me that you were going to get down on one knee and propose to me real soon, because I was deeply in love. The spirits say we're going to have 3 kids and it's all going to go crazy." 2 weeks later, we broke up. So if that does not prove Derek Acora is not
I think Derek might
gifted.
Have actually instigated that. It's caused a rift in your relationship.
Yeah, maybe. Spiteful proposal. Scouse git.
Just to kind of cover ourselves legally there, we have no evidence either way. So please don't sue us, Derek Acora.
Oh, all right then. If you're going to play that game, yeah. Allegedly, he broke up my relationship. But anyway.
That he's kind of hot on that kind of stuff. So, allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly. So, the show's back. And what's interesting from my point of view is how it's devolved. Because when it started out, I kind of feel it set up a lot of the practices a lot of shows now follow. The big crew, the many experiments going on in different places, the cameras, the different types of cameras. Now, it's nothing more than Carl and Yvette and their immediate close-knit group running around in the dark and say, I mean, seriously, if I hear the phrase, "What was that?" one more time listening to Most Haunted, I'm going to smash something. They should rename the show, "What Was That?" because it's more wrapped.
Yeah,
because every 5 seconds, so I've been to a few locations where they've filmed Most Haunted, specifically, obviously, Dudley Castle. They had so many things thrown at them in Dudley Castle that it beggared belief. I was there for a full night. Nothing was thrown except my will to live. It's either the spirit world particularly hate Yvette and Carl and want them dead, you know, by throwing whatever they can, or... I'm just going to put this out there. Someone throws stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or you haven't considered the third option, which is, you know, those children that you see where their parents discover they're magnetic and they stick spoons and stuff to them and go, "Look, my son's magnetic." Maybe, and actually it turns out they're just a bit sweaty. Maybe Yvette and Carl are also magnetic. They just haven't realised it.
But now there's no kind of... There's no kind of science to the show anymore. And even in the press release they put out recently, they were saying we're going to go for a more scientific approach, and they don't. They did one thing recently which I thought was interesting, where they set up a number of K meters. What's the word I'm looking for? My brain's K2. Fried to the K2 meters. Yeah, EMF. In a row along a corridor. And you can hear footsteps. And then one by one, these things start going off as the sound gets closer to the camera. So they're going off one by one to the camera. And I was like, you know what? They might have faked that somehow. But it was certainly more interesting to see that. Because they... I think they know that they've been caught out faking stuff. So I think whenever they maybe accidentally catch something supernatural they can't explain, you have to offset that against the amount of bullshit that they have proposed in the past. And so you've got this horrible kind of feeling when you watch the show now where it's like, where's the line drawn between them being idiots and kind of throwing themselves into horror movie scenarios for viewing figures? And what's them actually generally being surprised by the stuff they encounter? When you get to that, that's when the show becomes less... you know, bad TV and more kind of weird Fabergé egg curio of crassness.
I know that in one of the very early series, because when it first came out, my mum and I used to buy the DVDs. We used to watch it. We didn't watch it as skeptics. We watched it as people who believed in ghosts at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know the same how I watched it as well. I was completely terrified of the whole thing. And it was, I found it incredibly... enjoyable and thought, oh, there's no way anyone would be faking this. There's no way they would fake things for television.
I know. But there was one episode where they made a point of having this kind of round a table debate. Derek Okora was there, so it was one of the first seasons, and they were debating whether they should start using Ouija boards because up until then they hadn't. And I think that was kind of when it started to jump the shark a bit because they started to use the more seance parlor techniques that would kind of give them something to showcase, whereas before, especially in the very early episodes, they would just walk around in the dark with a medium saying stuff. Things would happen off camera, but nothing to kind of the extent that it does now. And I kind of think that was the moment when they had the Ouija board debate. That was when it kind of started to jump the shark.
Yeah, and now it's gotten to the point where they don't even care about that. Now they've gotten rid of the psychics completely. And they've gotten rid of most... Yeah, they got... You barely... I mean, I can't remember in the last couple of seasons if they've had a psychic on. They have their regular ghost hunter who comes along for balance, who, again, can't remember the name now. Paul Gannon, great at research. But... but it's a very, I don't want to say incestuous because that's not right the word, but you know what I'm getting at? That kind of very, very cliquey little group who now go ghost hunting together and they're all in on the joke. And if there's one thing I would love to remove very quickly, it's Fred Batt, the demonologist.
Oh, the only reason he's on there, isn't he dating Yvette's mum?
Oh God, please, if that's true, that is even more tragic than just help the aged. Because that's what it seems like.
That. It's something like that. There's a connection to her family with him. Because he owns that house that they did an investigation at and he owned, is it Brannigan's nightclub? With Ruth Ellis that was meant to haunt it. He owned that at the time. They did an investigation there and then Derek Okora picked up on some stuff relating to Fred Batt and his house. And then they did an episode of Most Haunted from his home, which was called something like The Clock Tower or something like that.
Yes, I remember this episode. He was he claims that Ruth Ellis actually like followed him home in the car.
That's right. And that he was a Knight Templar and and that's when he really started to get involved in Most Haunted. And then when it relaunched on Really, I remember hearing something about him being in a relationship with somebody in Yvette and Carl's family, but I'm not quite sure who.
And this is the thing about Fred Batt. It's like it's sad to watch him in action because he doesn't seem all there. He believes in things that I feel are troubling to believe in at that age with that much conviction. And so you get to that point where it's like, he starts off the show, he doesn't add much other than suggest we're going to be visited by dark demons. And then you barely see him in the episode afterwards. It's like they've put him in the car with a blanket around him to keep him quiet. It feels like that's what they do with him. And when he does get involved with the action, it's just him doing incantations and summoning demons and then running as fast as he can the minute he hears anything. And it's just doddery and sad. And I don't know. But this brings me round to the other point I wanted to make and hopefully wrap this section up with. It's that I was largely horrified, stroke, absolutely delighted to find out that there's a Most Haunted movie in the works. And this goes back to that idea I was talking about a minute or two ago where the line between what they fake for attention and to make Carl and Yvette feel like the victims of the supernatural world, because they're always being chased and shouted at and locked up, and Carl has a lovely habit these days of purposely putting Yvette in situations that make her upset and uncomfortable, which is troubling. And then what genuinely happens. And now, so the plot is, well, let me rephrase it this way. If you've ever seen Ghostwatch, they're doing that, and they've completely 360'd the whole genesis of Most Haunted.
It seems because such you a can look at bizarre thing to do, especially when there are accusations of having faked things for the show, that you actually make a fictional version of your show. It's very, very
But Charlie, they've thought of that, Charlie, because the point of the film is, and you're gonna love this, the plot is basically they get called out for faking stuff on Most Haunted. So they decide to do a live broadcast or something or other from a very haunted house. And then, oh no, there are really ghosts, and Carl and Yvette can't believe it as the crew are picked off one by one by this evil entity, you know? And so that's the story, which is basically Ghost that Watch. Ghost you know, Watch. It's a live
and you
ghost.
You know what? I'm kind of really up for seeing it now you've said that.
Well, I know. And this is the tragic thing. Now, it's the script's written by Carl.
Right.
So the fictional movie will star real-life show host Yvette Fielding and her husband Cole Beatty alongside Matt Willis, formerly of Busted fame. Great. And Hollyoaks star Gemma Atkinson. It's in early development, but a basic plot outline has been published forward. The story blurs the lines between real life and fiction. This is the thing that Haley was interested in. It features a fake psychic who they sack.
Right.
Called
okay.
Kailash Mivalan. And so that, because they get discredited, they want to get people back on their side, so they do a ghost hunt, blah, 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 blah. It's written by Carl, alongside a guy called Dominic Burns, who will direct and produce. I did a bit of research with Dominic Burns. He's one of those actors who's in, like, Third Man in the Left on The Bill, or once appeared on Casualty, or had a short film no one ever saw and is barely on YouTube in a presentable fashion. He's one of these guys, and allegedly, or not allegedly, apparently, they're going to try and show clips of it at Cannes this year for more finance.
Good Lord. What really struck me about this article that I read about it was that they said it was already set to be the biggest TV event for years, making it a hoax to rival Orson Welles' legendary broadcast of War of the Worlds. No!
Oh, well, good luck
no,
with that.
It's not going to rival that. That's and bullshit.
And also, there are tons of other films that exactly do that same plot. Like, a great example is it Grave Encounters? Which is a really fine found footage movie.
I've not seen that.
No, it's half decent. It's not breaking the mold, but in terms of the format, it does it better than most.
It's definitely one of the better found footage films. It has some proper scares in it.
Yeah, and it's got a nice little conceit to it, you know. So it's well worth checking out. The sequel, as always, blows it and makes it worse. But Grave Encounters, fine film. But it's basically doing that. It's not doing anything new. It just seems like it's Most Haunted desperately trying to make itself relevant in the current climate of paranormal reality TV, which is still flourishing almost 20 years on from when Most Haunted was on air. Was it like 2001, 2002 when it first came out?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So it's interesting anyway. Now, by interesting, I mean depressing.
It's like you said before, though, as well. It's the whole kind of plot is very similar to Ghostwatch. It's almost identical to Ghostwatch, except for Ghostwatch wasn't an existing TV show. They didn't sack a sidekick, blah, blah, blah. But in years gone by, we've always kind of commented on how Most Haunted seem to be inspired by Ghostwatch. And it's like they've completed the cycle because they're now becoming like self-referential.
It even has a former Blue Peter presenter doing it just like
Ghostwatch. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's Most Haunted
uncanny.
Ends... with that Fielding being trapped in his cupboard under the stairs, then we know it's crossed the line.
I was going to say, wouldn't it be weird if, as they're filming the movie, real activity starts to happen and they get picked off one by one by ghosts in real life and no one believes it and everyone just thinks they've gone into hiding to promote the movie and we never see them again?
The recursive nature of that statement is actually making me quite uncomfortable. It's like, where's this Hall of Mirrors end? So there you go, that's my report on Most Haunted. I'm flabbergasted it's still on, and flabbergasted that it still wants to be relevant, and this movie, we are going to have to watch it. We know we're going to have to watch this film.
Oh, let's not even pretend we're not going to. I actually said when you mentioned to me that it was going to be a thing, I said we need to get into the premiere. And then Charlie said, it's not going to have a premiere. It's not going to be that big, but I bet you it will. We have an update from a previous story. On the last episode, we discussed the story of Amanda Teague. For those who don't remember, that's the woman who claims to have married the ghost of a pirate. Well, on Valentine's Day this year in the UK, she appeared on the television show Loose Women to discuss her marriage, and she revealed some further details about the whole situation, which I thought I just had to tell you guys about. She told the presenters that she goes on dates with the ghost, which I didn't know before, and that her friend is in a relationship with Jack the Ghost's best friend, and they both go on like double dates. She told the presenters, we buy them a drink and we get them a seat, but she then went on to clarify that they're unable to drink or eat, but she buys him the stuff just out of respect, as you do. She also told the host that she had a pregnancy scare, saying it was more a case that I missed a month and I went to my GP and she said, you've got to be pregnant. But it turned out it was the start of the menopause, which just makes this whole story a little bit more depressing.
Just a little bit.
There is part of me which wonders, how much are we supposed to take this story seriously? How much is her appearance on Loose Women, on in the newspapers, all of those kinds of things? We're supposed to be laughing with her. She is somehow, she is in with the joke and is having some fun with it. Then, but because otherwise, it's just really sad. Like, really sad that this is a woman and her friend obviously need some help if this is what they're believing. Unless, of course, it is 100% true. There is that.
Yeah, there is that.
It seems like a lot of effort.
You just have to think, is if she isn't, you know, enjoying the ride, having some fun, getting a wacky story published everywhere. If that's not the case, I hope that there is somebody looking out for her, because it sounds like she might be quite a vulnerable person otherwise.
Yeah, it does. That's the question it kind of raised with me, was has it not now progressed from us laughing with her to us laughing at her? Because on Loose Women, there's a clip online that I'll link to if it's still online as this episode goes out. There's basically the panel of presenters, and she's on the screen, and it's just like they're kind of gawping at her and they're asking stupid questions, so that she can give them more stupid answers and sound silly so that we can all have a laugh at her. And there is kind of this one point when she's talking about the pregnancy thing that you can kind of see that it's almost like she realizes how, by saying that she had a pregnancy scare, she's like, oh, I've made myself sound stupid. So she's like, Bob, it turned out it was just, you know, natural and it wasn't a pregnancy. And I think that's kind of sad in a way. I think a lot of people are out there looking for their 15 minutes of fame and it makes a good headline. But then it kind of, at some point, it descends into this where we're kind of just laughing at someone for entertainment.
Yeah, and is there something diagnosable going on that we're obviously not privy to? In which case, the whole reporting of it actually is quite troubling.
Well,
Is it maybe two women who fancy each other, who don't want to admit that they do, creating this story about having ghostly boyfriends so they can meet up privately in a pub? You know, I mean, I don't know, but
I think it would
also be a clever way of eating twice as much.
It is. Maybe it's just a big con by the pub chains around where they live. But I think it's not really helpful to speculate, you know, why they're doing it, whether it's because they've got some delusion or I don't know, you know. But yeah, it's
only
it's
they
odd
will
one.
Know.
Yeah, only they will know. So it just would have. It was just very weird and kind of a little bit sad to see them on Loose Women. Not that I watch
It's
Loose
always
Women.
Quite sad seeing people on Loose Women.
Yeah, I just care about, I don't watch Loose Women unless it just happens to be on. Sometimes I watch Jeremy Kyle just to make myself feel better about myself. And Loose Women tends to come on after Jeremy Kyle. And so sometimes it would just be on whilst, you know, I'm in the house. But yeah, I never purposely watch it. Honest.
Your Honour. Yeah. Oh,
this month, for this episode, I've been looking into a recent wave of sightings of the so-called Mothman in Chicago. If anyone doesn't know who the Mothman is or was, originally referred to a winged humanoid creature which stood taller than an adult man and haunted a small town in West Virginia in the USA called Point Pleasant between 1966 and 67. There were dozens of witnesses. Some people say over 100, but at least dozens, we'll say dozens of witnesses, yeah, reported seeing a menacing figure with glowing red eyes and seeing it both in the air and standing on the ground. As well as that, there was also accounts of people receiving menacing anonymous phone calls over the course of the course of 2 years. At the time, these sightings were mostly attributed to the Sandhill Crane, which is a huge bird. I've actually seen one before. I was in the Indiana sand dunes on a walk, and I've got a photo of it, which I will share to the page. It's not a good photo, but you get an idea of what the bird is. I remember just walking along the path and seeing it sort of had its head down and its backside in the air. And so that was all that you saw through these long reeds was the kind of like the back end of it. And it stood up, and honestly, I thought it was a dinosaur. It was that kind of, it was just the most prehistoric looking thing. It was just insane. Anyway, it's a huge bird. It stands as tall as a human, and it has red circles around its eyes, which could attribute the idea of the
It's as tall as a human.
Yeah, it's absolutely enormous. It has a 7-foot wingspan.
Jeez.
And it flies as well, which is terrifying. God.
It's like that scene out of the Flintstones movie where there's a pterodactyl and they're all running for cover because it's going to poo on them. That's what that would be like if it flew overhead. You'd be running for cover.
Yeah, they are. I mean, the thing is, they're relatively common, but not in this town in Virginia. So they think that it possibly could have been a crane which had gone off course and it had just spent a little, it sort of rocked up in this town and was like, well, I've got a river here, I can stick around here for a little while. People weren't familiar with it, so it was a freaky thing to see, as you can imagine. So the standard story at the time was that it's most likely a bird, this sandhill crane. However, on December 15th, 1967, the Silver Bridge, which was a suspension bridge which crossed the Ohio River, collapsed, killing 46 people. And the Mothman became seen as either an omen of an impending tragedy or even the cause of it. So there are some people who actually even claim that they saw the Mothman on the bridge just before the bridge collapsed. Now, there was a 1975 book called The Mothman Prophecies, which yes, popularized the legends.
Is that the one they made the film out of with Richard Gere?
Yes, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Good. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
It was a 2002 film adaptation starring Richard Gere and the peerless Laura Linney, who I absolutely adore. She was doing one of her slumming it roles she does occasionally. Have either of you seen it?
Yes. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I saw it a long time ago.
As a kid, I was terrified of them. Like, I'm not even kidding. I was terrified of the Mothman, even though it was never seen in the UK. As a child, I was so scared that I couldn't look out of windows at nighttime because in my mind, I knew that if I looked out of the window, I would see the red eyes of the Mothman looking in. And so I would have to walk around my house with my hand shielding my eyes from the windows. Yeah. So when I grew up and snapped out of that, I was like, right, I have to read the book and I have to watch the film to get over it. But even then, I was still quite on edge.
I think the film, I would say it's a C-plus movie in my mind.
It's brilliant.
But yeah. I tell you what, it does have an incredibly thrilling, the bridge collapse scene is
yes,
just quite breathtaking. I would go as far as saying it is the second best bridge collapse scene in film history after Final Destination 5, which is
which is
just a staggering film, a staggering scene in that film.
I've only ever watched the first Final Destination film.
Oh, the Final Destination films are really strange because you know you have like the laws of diminishing returns. It's usually the first one is good, the second one is worse, and then they just get worse and worse as they go on. The sequence of the Final Destination films in order of quality is 5, 2, 1, 3, 4. And I will say that, I will take that to my grave. The fifth one is the best one.
Okay. It's all right. Yeah, I would say 2, 1, 5, 3, 4.
Yeah. 4 is definitely the weakest one.
Final Destination really freaked me out, actually, because when I first saw it at the cinema, it really haunted me, because the idea of doing something small that leads to your death without you knowing it is really kind of unsettling to think about.
It is. And I know exactly what you mean. There is something I find probably more disturbing about those films than any other, that there is something that really does play with you, sticks with the...
It's the death in the bathtub of that kid in the first film, which is just horrible to watch because the horrible thing is, not too long after I saw the film, something similar happened to me as well, where there was, I can't remember the exact reason why it kicked off, but basically I was in a kitchen in a student dorm and we were making food, and I usually never use this big knife set to use, because I had my own little cheap set that I was using, because it was the house share knife set, but I wanted to chop up some potatoes, so I used this big knife, and the window that to our dorm room was always closed apart from this one day. And what happened was really weird. It was that I was holding the knife the wrong direction, because I was going to pass it to someone with the handle, and when I did, the window flew open on a gust of wind and pushed my hand towards my chest, and if I'd been standing too close, I would have plunged that knife into my chest. And
God.
I know. And it freaked me out, because that whole chain of circumstances would never have happened usually, because I don't like using that big knife set. The window's never usually open. And, you know, I was only passing the knife to a friend. So it was horrible. And anyway, Mothman.
God.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's so creepy, though.
Yeah.
Mothman. Beginning in May of last year, although some sources do say that there was anecdotal stories from as early as 2011, there are accounts of the Mothman or a similar creature being sighted in Chicago. And as of recording, there have been almost 60 reported sightings in the Windy City area. Usually it's described as looking like a bat or an owl with huge wings and, again, with red glowing eyes, which has led many to believe that, again, it could be explained as Sandhill Crane. Particularly when the sightings are plotted out on a map, you see that they tend to fall along either the Chicago River, Lake Michigan, or in there's quite a few large lakes in parks around the city, and there seems to kind of cluster around these areas, sources of water. Now, paranormal researcher Joel Nickel has suggested that some of these sightings can be attributed to large owls, and that their glowing eyes is a reflection of lights, which you quite often see with cats and things like that, that you get that kind of glowing effect. And it certainly matches a lot of the eyewitnesses' reports. In 2016, there was a photograph, which has been reproduced absolutely everywhere online, of what seems to be a winged creature with human-like legs trailing behind. Now, when you first look at it, I don't know if either of you have seen this this picture.
I have. It's kind of a grey picture.
Yes,
isn't it?
And it does immediately. It just looks like, oh yeah, that does look like a flying person. However, there is a suggestion been put forward that it's most likely a bird of prey, with either a snake or an eel in its claws. And once you see it like that, you're like, oh yeah, it actually does look like that now. It does look like they're not human legs at all. It's just carrying some long thing behind it. So what the best explanations seem to be, that we're looking at an avian source for the Mothman. I would actually like to put forward my own theory on the Chicago Mothman sightings that I haven't heard anybody else put forward. In the past few years, there have been efforts to clean up the notoriously polluted Chicago River, and they seem to have finally started taking effect. So they're having the fish population is increasing. It's increased dramatically, actually, and it's resulted in a really surprising urban visitor, which is the American bald eagle. Now, I've actually seen one of these as well. For anyone who is listening who might know Chicago, this was on North Avenue while crossing the bridge by the home the Home Depot and Stanley's Fruit and Veg. And it was utterly huge, and it was utterly bizarre as well, because you never imagine you'll spot a bird that's so associated with the American wilderness in the middle of a gigantic city. And yeah. I would imagine that in the half light of an evening, or even through Chicago's many, many fogs, this huge bird that already looks out of place and kind of surreal could be interpreted as something else and otherworldly. So that is my explanation. And
especially when you consider the fact that once the suggestion's there, there's something in the Chicago area.
There was a snowball
people are more
effect,
likely to interpret,
isn't it?
Yeah.
That once you see something that you don't explain, it's just like, it's afterwards you start piecing it together with things which you've heard already. That So that's my explanation, and I hope I'm right, because Chicago is a lovely place and it's full of fantastic people, and I'd hate to see anything like the bridge collapse at Point Pleasant happened there. So there you go. Go Chicago, go Cubs.
As some listeners might know, we have a Facebook page for the podcast, which can be found at facebook.com/spooktator. And recently, Charlie, you started a thread on there and you asked people the question, if you could find out the truth behind one unsolved mystery from history, which would it be? I like the fact that that rhymes. I didn't even notice that until I read that out there. Unsolved mystery from history. And you said that you'd go pretty dark and find out who murdered JonBenet Ramsey.
It would have to be JonBenet. I mean, I know that there are probably more important mysteries in the world, but that is the one which just come back to again and again.
It's a creepy, creepy story, the way that she was just found in the basement, and the ransom note was written from inside the house and practiced, and very weird.
All along with their stationery and the whole thing about the child beauty queen. There was something that was off about the whole story right from the start.
I decided that my one unsolved mystery from history would be finding out who the Zodiac killer was, because I've always been quite interested in serial killers from a kind of psychological perspective. I always felt like I was a bit of a weirdo. I was like, am I a serial killer in the making? But it turns out loads of people are interested in serial killers, so I don't feel so bad now. But I've always been fascinated with the serial killer and the theories about who it could be. I think that it was Arthur Lee Allen, who is one of the kind of key suspects. But
is that
we don't know.
Is that the
we don't
guy
know.
That the film kind of heavily indicates? Yeah.
Yeah. He had like the wrist watch with the Zodiac symbol on it, and it was called a Zodiac watch. And yeah, he was... I think that was the first suspect they mentioned in the film.
That's a terrific film, that one is. Yeah.
It is. It's a brilliant film. And just reading about the Zodiac killer and the timeline is just so intense, because there was more than one police force working on it. So much information may have been missed that could have helped, but we'll never know. So that was mine.
The Last Podcast on the Left do a really good takedown of the Zodiac Killer. I think this is breaking across two or three episodes. It's interesting because their main theory seems to be that it seems like Jack the Ripper maybe is a couple of people that might have been doing it, kind of like a copycat or using it as an excuse, because the weapon always changed and from person to person, and there's a slight different, you know, modus operandi and all these kind of things.
Yeah.
But that's why I want to know who it was. Like, I want to know. Like, we need the answers to those questions, and we're never going to get them, because whoever it was is probably dead by now.
Yes, very likely. I think I put down...
Jack the Ripper.
I did, but I mean, that's whatever. I was more interested in the, and I can never pronounce this, the Dyatlov Pass. You know, the Russian story. Have you heard this one?
Yes, Dyatlov. I've always thank you. But I don't know if that's accurate.
Yeah, I'm going to trust you more than me. The story of some mountain climbers in Russia who went to a certain spot, went missing, and then were found literally naked in the snow. They'd torn themselves out of their tents. One guy had their tongue missing. It was all just lots of random things.
Some of them were naked, and other ones were wearing their clothes.
What?
Some of them were found naked, and some of the bodies were found wearing the naked people's clothes.
It's a crazy story.
It was just like, what on earth happened there? It was
but also
it was a group of was it 6 or 7 people involved?
Yeah, it was one big group, but then they split off, didn't they? And the one group went back and the other one went on.
Yes. Yeah, and there was a camera found at the site, so we have photographs of them throughout this whole experience while they're at Canberra, and they're incredibly creepy pictures. Yeah. Just because you know what happened, well, you know what ended up happening. We don't know how they ended up to be in that situation. It is,
yeah, it's just so many possibilities.
But then there's also the other story that I wanted to know about, and I keep forgetting her name. Again, Paul needs to do his research before he does a podcast. But about the girl who was in the hotel in LA,
Eliza
and was in
Lam.
The lift. Yeah, that story really upsets me. And
she
also
ended up
the
water tank on the roof.
Yes, that
which
video
was sealed.
Of her in the lift where it looks like she's hiding and then talking to somebody.
It's really scary.
Yes. Yeah, that hotel itself seems to just be associated with so many freaky things which have happened in LA.
Yeah.
Wasn't the Black Dahlia there as well?
I think there was a connection there. I think it was the Night Stalker, the serial killer, stayed there for a while.
Yes. It was.
There was mysteries upon mysteries. There was someone else who posted a good one, which I would like to, which is the Somerton Man. In Australia.
Yeah, that was
Someone
called Chris Fairhurst said that Jack the Ripper and he said Tamal Shud guy in Australia.
Yes, yeah,
is that
it was the note which was found on him. He was a man who is still unidentified man, a dead man found on a beach in Australia. It had all of like identifying marks, labels, and things were cut out of his clothes. There was kind of strange. He had an extract of a poem in his pocket, which translated as "It is finished" or something like that.
Yeah.
And there was all kinds of other things as well. Like he had a packet of cigarettes, but the cigarettes inside weren't the same as the ones on the brand on the packet. And it was all really kind of spooky story, which no one knows what was going on there. And the beach itself is a weird beach as well. It was a place where two young girls vanished in the 1960s, and also in the 1960s their prime minister vanished from there and was never found.
That's right. Yeah.
That is one of the strange things you have to think about Australia. They had a prime minister who vanished and they never found him.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, Jim Kennedy says that he was going to go old school and say JFK, but he agreed with you, Paul, about the whatever it's is past.
Yeah, that one.
That Russian mystery. Rob Lee said that he wants to know how Ed and Lorraine Warren faked the little boy photo from Amityville. The best explanation that he's heard is a guy called Paul Bartz, who won't even deny that it's him. Rob says it bothers him because they were such hucksters, allegedly. They were determined to get something out of that house, allegedly.
It is a very spooky picture. If you,
it is. Yeah. Before I stopped believing in ghosts, I thought that was a real photo and I could never look at it. If something scared me, I just couldn't look at it. Yeah. When I watched Blair Witch Project, I was 12 years old when I watched the first Blair Witch Project, and I couldn't look up into trees in case there were those effigy things hanging from the trees.
Wow.
I was a very irrational child. Very irrational. John Dockham says that he wants to know who D.B. Cooper is
and did he survive
the jump. And actually, that's a really good one. Fran agrees that she would have to find out who Jack the Ripper was. And Tanise says that she wants to know what happened to Madeleine McCann. And I kind of felt guilty when I read that because I was like, oh, yeah, we've all kind of gone for like historic ones, but Madeleine McCann could still be alive and we've not gone with that one.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very good point.
I mean, of very modern mysteries, that aeroplane which vanished a few years back, I think that will go down in history as being one of those unsolved mysteries of what actually happened. Where did a plane vanish in modern times?
What we would like to know, listeners, which one unsolved mystery from history would you like to find out the truth behind? You can tweet us at the Spooktator, or you can head over to the Facebook page, facebook.com/Spooktator, and let us know. We'll read some of the responses out in future episodes. It's actually quite interesting to see kind of the crossover between people who listen to this paranormal podcast who are also interested in other kind of true crime.
Yes, it's a big crossover with true crime, it seems.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
can I just also ask as well, if anyone listening actually knows the answers and want to remain anonymous and get in touch, we will receive all stories, regardless of their authenticity or validity. We will take them all as truth.
Yeah. What we're saying is, if you're the Zodiac Killer, we want to know.
Get in
we
touch.
Want an interview. Just get in touch. Yeah. So this has been another episode of The Spooktator. Remember that you can find all of the links to the stories and things we have discussed at spooktator.co.uk, where you can also get in touch with us. We'd also like to hear what stories you'd like us to discuss on the show. If you've seen interesting articles or news stories, send us a link. And please consider leaving a review for the podcast to help others find us. And thank you to those who have already done so. We'll be back with Season 2, Episode 3 in March. Until then, remember, spooky is in the eye of the beholder.